grab your Bible and your handout. We're going to Ecclesiastes 3. It'll be verses 1 to 8. It's on page 471. This is going to be the most familiar passage of Ecclesiastes as far as culture goes. There's this band called The Birds that your parents might have listened to that wrote a song about this passage of Ecclesiastes, and they quoted it word for word. So we're not going to sing The Birds because none of you know what that song is. But Ecclesiastes 3, 1 to 8. If you're new with us tonight and haven't been a part of our Ecclesiastes series, here's what's going down. Ecclesiastes is written by Solomon. He's king over Israel about 3,000 years ago. He's old, looked back on a sinful life and said, here's what I would tell you if I could tell you what I knew back then. And then what he's going to do is take a really hard, aggressive look at life and kind of expose some of the places in life where we see some things are lacking. And then ultimately, this is supposed to bring us happiness and joy because when Solomon starts to call out things that we might be putting our hope in, it's good for us to find that that thing won't last. All right, so now we hold to 2 Timothy 3:16. It says, all scripture is breathed out by God. All of it's profitable. All of it teaches. All of it corrects. All of it causes us to grow, that all of us would be complete, equipped for every good work. Now, you may not believe in the Bible. That's okay. We're cool with that. But what we will say is that Ecclesiastes 3, we don't think you can disagree with Ecclesiastes. That if you don't agree with where we take it, you could look at it and say, I don't know if I'm down for that where we go. But when we look at Ecclesiastes 3, I think we're all down there. All right, so Ecclesiastes 3, 1 to 8, we'll read this and then we'll get ripping. All right, so again, page 471. So here we go. For everything there is a season and a time for every matter under heaven. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to pluck up what is planted. A time to kill, Matthew McConaughey, and a time to heal. A time to break down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance or walk, depending on how you listen to Crystal. A time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones together. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to seek and a time to lose. A time to keep and a time to cast away. A time to tear and a time to sow. A time to keep silence and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time for war and a time for peace. Now, we've got something at the bottom of your handout called a bottom line. And if you get nothing else from our time together today, we want you to get this. Know the reason for the season. Bing! And it happens just as Christmas or Thanksgiving's getting hijacked by Christmas. But know the reason for the season. And this is not going to be a Jesus is the reason for the season message, all right? But know the reason for the season. Now, Solomon's basis in Ecclesiastes is let's test life, let's look at life, let's see what life is happening. Now, as the weeks before, we were doing this examination. And so what Solomon is going to do out of this is he's going to start to say, okay, after we looked at a couple different places in life and put those to the test, these are just going to be general observations about what it is in life. Now, what he does say is that for everything there is a season, a time for every matter under heaven. And what we want to say there is kind of that first blank we've got for you up top is that all seasons sanctify. All seasons sanctify. You can get gospel on it if you want to. Letitia sang about it on Sunday. But all seasons sanctify. All right? All seasons sanctify. And what Solomon means by season is appointed time. Right? So seasons are easy. Here in Missouri, we get two seasons, summer and winter. There is no such thing as autumn or fall. There is no such thing as spring. It's wicked hot and wicked cold. And I am a seasons guy. I'd say my two favorite seasons would be spring and would be fall. But we here get jacked by 115-degree weather that the next week is negative 20 and all of the shrubbery dies, right? So even for us, like one of the traditions our family has started is we take pictures every year and send those to people. So instead of doing the Christmas bulletin card, letter, little Johnny's going off to college this year thing, we just take pictures and say, we love you lots, thanks from the Chandlers, right? Now, what happens for us is fall's a good season to take pictures because usually fall around here is the prettiest time in the Ozarks because the trees are turning colors, and if you drive down to Branson, you're like, wow, it's beautiful here. One time in our life, it's beautiful here. This year, gypped. It went from green to death, all right? And so there wasn't a lot for us to take pictures of apart from let's stand by this tree that's died. Now, that season means that stuff fits into summer here. Humidity, hot, death fit into summer here, right? And then you go to winter. Humidity, freezing, you can't buy a coat that's going to keep you warm fits into winter. Ice storms, you know, power outages, those fit into winter. And that's just the boundaries of seasons. And so what Solomon says is, our life will have seasons. Our life will have appointed times in which things come our way that we're going to walk through. And those seasons are full of every emotion, every activity, and that's where we get 2 to 8, which is where we'll spend a lot of time tonight. So we'll throw all of 2 to 8 up there again. And so a time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, and a time to pluck up what is planted, a time to kill, and a time to heal, a time to break down, and a time to build up, a time to weep, and a time to laugh, a time to mourn, and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones, and a time to gather stones together, a time to embrace, and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to seek, and a time to lose, a time to keep, and a time to cast away, a time to tear, a time to sow, a time to keep silence, and a time to speak, a time to love, and a time to hate, a time for war, and a time for peace. And so as he walks through all of these seasons of life, he says, we're all going to find ourselves in a season. And the first one he says is that we're going to be in a season where we're born or we die. And then he goes to kind of more the agricultural, where things are planted and the things are plucked up. And that's just full life. That is your life with the dash, right? You're born, me, December 10th, 1983. I've got a dash. And then who knows when my day is. But there will be a day in which this ends. So that day. And so there is a season where I'm born. There's a season where I die. No shocker. But when it comes to Ecclesiastes, what he says is that's the season, but that none of us controls when that season comes. So unless you off yourself, you are not controlling when you die. You just are going to die someday. And so that's the way he says that no person or plant controls when the starter finishes, right? So there's been blades of grass that were expecting to live longer, and you just walked by and ripped them out of the ground. And then you just threw it into the wind and was like, oh, it's a windy day today. Unless you play golf, and that's, you do that all the time, right? So there it goes. Nothing controls it. The next one is that there's a time to kill and a time to heal. And then you've got the time to kill is an intentional act to end somebody's life, right? So it's not like this, oh my gosh, I killed that person. Oh. It's the intentional, like, brat-a-tat, Mac 10 on somebody. And then healing is the intentional act to preserve a life. So killing, intentional act to end. Healing, intentional act to save. Now, when a time to kill comes, most of us go Samuel L. Jackson, Matthew McConaughey, John Grisham, thank you very much, right? So that's where most of us go. But what the Bible's not saying is that there's times where it's okay to murder, right? It's not like the Bible said, hey, there's going to be a day where you need to shoot somebody. Shoot them well, right? This isn't like God's advocacy for the right to bear arms. So if somebody comes storming into your house, you're going to bust them down. That's not the way this goes. And it's not an advocacy of the Bible saying, hey, if somebody does something really bad, kill them by the government, capital punishment. That's not what this verse is intending. Now, people have taken Ecclesiastes and go, hey, there's a time to kill. And you know who I'm ready to kill? That guy. All right, so that's where some people have done very bad deeds with the Bible, no shocker, but then they read Ecclesiastes and go, there's a time to kill. I want to kill Tyler. And so what Solomon reflects on is there are days where all of us are going to go through periods in which somebody is killed. We're going to go through periods in which somebody is healed. That's not reflective of God saying, great job killing that guy. It was so awesome. I'm so in approval of that. That's not the way it plays. All right. The next one is to break down or to build up. Now, killing and healing and breaking down and building up are connected, but there's time to construct and there's time to deconstruct. And so all of you are in a season where you're supposed to be building up right now. AKA your intelligence. And so you're in a season where it's good for you to be building up. Now, here's the problem. If you're not building up right now, when you graduate, things are going to start to break down very quickly because you're living with a person who's built up, and the way they've built up enough is to sustain another life, namely yours. So when you don't build up and you get cut out, then all of a sudden you're going to be in the place where that really stinks. Because you didn't build up. So my one soapbox on all of this is that if you do well in school, you give yourself all kinds of options. If you don't do well in school, you just limited the majority of your options. And here's what I'll say about public education or most education up through the end of high school. If you do your homework and you study, you will get A's. That is my guarantee. And here's what I can guarantee. Even if you don't get an A, you can go to a teacher and say, I studied and I do my homework. And they'll go, it's all good because I know you study and I know you do your homework. You just took a test bad. That's my guarantee. All right? If you don't do that, if you jack around like, I ain't doing that homework tonight, right? Then you're like, I'm not studying for that test. I'm playing Call of Duty Black Ops 2. And you don't do well on a test, then your teacher's probably not going to be like, how was Black Ops? Good? You enjoy that F? Keep it. All right? So there's a time to break down. There's a time to build up. And then that reflects to life and that there's times for you to be adding things to your life and there's times for you to be taking things away. Man, there's going to be seasons where you're like, I'm just looking for something to do right now. I'm looking for a hobby. Maybe I'll start collecting cars, going fishing, wearing new clothes. I don't know what your hobby will be. But there's times where you add things, and there's times where you go, I am so overwhelmed right now. It's time to get rid of some stuff. So there's times to break down, and there's times to build up. The next is that there's a time to weep, there's a time to laugh, there's time to mourn, and there's time to dance. Now, this is all related to emotions. And so weeping is a private matter. Like when you weep, that's what you do in your bedroom. Like, that's ugly cry. That's where you start having snot funnel down from your nose. You start tasting it in your mouth. You can't breathe because you're going, that's weeping. Okay, so this is the ugly cry place, all right? When you're crying so bad and it's ugly, it is an ugly, all right? So there's weeping, that's private. Mourning's where you take that public. So when does mourning happen? Funerals. That is a very public matter, okay? So what weeping did in private, mourning does in public. When you laugh, that's typically a private matter, you amongst your friends. You probably aren't at the queue going, for everybody to join in with you. That's not there. But what do most people who are experiencing joy and gladness and happiness do? They respond with dancing. Now, I know, 99.99% of you do not respond with dancing well. I get that. Rhythmically challenged, walking in place does not count. If you've been in church a long time, the church says, hey, if it's time to dance, what most people of Caucasian descent do is bounce in place. Now, here's what I'll tell you. That would not play as dancing anywhere, right? That's never in public. If you went out and there's some jazz festival going down and you're like, oh, I'm just feeling this in my bones right now, and you start doing this, nobody's going to be like, look at that guy getting it on the dance floor right now. Bouncing guy is crushing it. That never happens, okay? So for me, like when I grew up, most of my dancing was not reflective of Jesus. And so when I came into church, it was often difficult if they said dance. My reaction to dancing was a very narrow, specific niche. That does not play well when it's like celebrate Jesus and all of a sudden I am shaking my moneymaker. All right, that does not transcend well. And so you learn ways to dance. You learn ways to have fun. But here's what I'll tell you. You can tell your life and if there's joy in your life by when you stop singing and you stop dancing. Because those two things just come out. Man, when you're happy, you're singing, Elf, thank you, Christmas, right? You just find this way to start letting out song because you're happy. And then what happens as rhythm and tambourines and music just start happening? You start, oh, and you start feeling it in your bones. And you may not feel it like this. That's all right. You may feel it like this. I don't know what your feel is, but once you start feeling it in your bones, you start going. All right, so there you go. So weeping, there's times of weeping, times of laughing, times of mourning, times of dancing. So you're going to experience the full realm of emotions in life. All right, there's time to cast away stones and time to gather stones. Now, there's two ways we look at this. There's either agriculture and cultivation, which is if you're going to go out and start planting stuff, you don't want to plant seeds on rocks. Rocks don't grow things very well. All right, so just natural observation. If you put a seed on a rock, it's probably not going to go very far. All right, but what do? If you've got a field and you want to start planting, you go get one of those tiller things and you just start churning some junk up and you start throwing out rocks. And so that's the way that you start casting stones away. Now, even what the Bible would say, how do you ruin somebody's field? You throw rocks on it. So this is where Solomon's like, man, there's times where you're casting stones away. There's times where you're gathering stones. The other reflection would be in war. And then you've got in war, there's time where you gather stones, like that's a defense measure. And then there's times where you cast stones. That's offensive. Now, we don't use stones to fight anymore. Like, no one is saying, like, the Russians are invading. No one does that. The only people who do that are riots and mobs, all right? And they're just throwing that at the police, hoping they don't get tear gas to the face, all right? But there's a time to gather stones, hey, defensive measures, gather this up, and there's a time where you just gotta grip it and rip it. All right, the next one is there's a time to embrace, and there's a time to refrain from embracing. What is embracing? It's a hug. However, However, this ain't no normal hug. This is what we like to call a super hug. This is like a hug where people start getting naked afterwards kind of hug, all right? So there is a, everybody's like, whoa, yep, that's where it went. Okay, so Vampire Diaries, here we go. So there is a time for embracing, and there's a time to refrain from. Now, in the context of the Bible, this is always speaking towards marriage. So the Bible's not saying, hey, you're single, there is a time to embrace, all right? And then if you're single, there's a time to refrain from embracing. That is not the way it plays. It's speaking towards marriage. And so in marriage, I'm going to go ahead and take the notebook, and I'm just going to crush your romantic world, okay? Here's what I'm going to say. When you're married, you do not have sex all the time. And here's a couple reasons why. If the person you're married to is vomiting, your first instinct is not to embrace, right? Because if you've been next to somebody who's vomiting, it makes you yourself want to vomit. And do you want to get all ugly bear snuggy poo with somebody who smells like vomit? No. Okay? So you don't. That's the way it goes. Now, here's the other thing. Rachel's going to have a baby, right? We're going to have a season where we refrain from embracing. Because it's not like she just, you know, had a Stargate have a baby come out, all right? That's not the way that this plays, all right? I don't know if anybody watches Stargate, but that's just the easiest way for me to equate that, all right? There wasn't some, beam me up, Scotty, and then Chandler boy number two is going to go with the molecules and say, here I am. It's not the way it goes. So there's going to be a season where we refrain from embracing, and that's all good. Now, for those of you who aren't married, your season is refraining from embracing because it usually doesn't give well if you start embracing often. Embracing often leads to nakedness. Nakedness before marriage usually has some problems with it, all right? But, hey, there it is. All right, so here's how that goes, though, right? So for us, yep, all right. So here's how that plays for us. Like when Rachel and I, when we start giving each other prolonged hugs, that's good. I mean, that causes procreation. We make children with that, right? That's a great thing. You don't want to be doing that. And I think that that's enough for right now. All right, so we'll move on. There's a time to seek and lose. There's a time to keep and cast away. All of those are together. And this is just relating to possessions. And there's seasons where we keep things. There's seasons where we give it up. There's seasons where we're in pursuit of something. And there's seasons where we stop pursuing. And you'll never know what happens if you give it up, if you would have got it later, right? But there are times where it is pursuing time. And so if you're a young man, there will come a time where you are going to pursue a young lady. If you're a young lady, there will never be a time in your life in which you need to pursue a man. If you're pursuing a man, he is a loser. Stop pursuing him. All right? Because here's how it boiled down simply. If he liked you enough, he would pursue. If he's not pursuing, he don't like you enough, and he's a scrub. And you don't want no scrubs. Scrubs are the kind of guys that get no love from you, all right? They're hanging on the passenger side of your best friend's ride trying to holler at you. You don't want a scrub, TLC. Okay, so who knows what happens when you stop pursuing? And so even in the seasons of life, most of your friendships are going to be seasonal. Most of your friendships at some point are going to end. And so there's going to be a time at which you move on from a friendship. And it's not because you hate on somebody. It's just we have grown out of that friendship. And if you've been around here long enough, you've heard me say when you graduate high school, that season of friendships for the majority of your friends is over. And so it's only those friends that you've had deep friendship and intimacy with that you'll keep after high school. And you'll find out who the chumps are, right? Because Facebook has you having 1,000 friends right now. You're friends with your whole high school. You're not friends with your whole high school. I don't care if you're the most popular person the world has ever created, Justin Bieber. You are not friends with that many people. And so there's going to be a time at which you got to say, hey, it's okay to cast away. And so for me, man, there's plenty of friends that I have that we've moved on in our friendship. Like, we're still cool. If I see them, I'll be like, what's up, man? Give me a hug. How are you? How's your wife? How's your kids? How's life? I mean, we'll do that. But when I go, man, I got to call somebody right now. I'm probably not going to call that person. And that's not me hating. That's just me saying there's times where you seek. There's times where you cast away. There's times where you lose. There's times where you keep. That's just the way it goes. All right? There's a time to tear and sow. There's a time for silence and a time to speak. And so what I would say, the Justin translation for this is there's a time to tear and a time to sow, and there's a time to zip your lips, and there's a time to open it. All right? So When in the Bible, when you read in the Bible, one of the things that the Bible says over and over and over again is that you can tell whether a person's wise by what comes out of their mouth. Now, here's what's happened to all of us. Social networks have given us a mouth for everybody to hear at all times. All right? And then you start getting into this sub-status, sub-tweeting stuff where you're talking about somebody, but you're not talking about somebody. So the whole idea of like, you know what I don't like? People who come to my house at 12:01 p.m. and knock on my window who've got blonde hair and blue eyes and are 5'10 and name rhymes with Mallory. Right? That's all of that junk. There's a time for you to not say something and a time for you to speak up. Now, most of us are going to get it. If I'm right, it's time for me to speak up. Like, most of us function in that. Why? Because we're young as it relates to speaking wisdom. And so you can ask Rachel. My natural instinct is to say something. Just because I grew up in the streets, and I just know you got to talk stuff. All right, I'm just kidding. there's times where you got to say something. There's times, and so if my natural, and you can even ask her this week, I was like, man, I just want to say it. She's like, Justin, you're already saying it. You're saying it to me. I was like, no, I want to say it to more people. I was like, and more people need to hear this truth. And she's like, Justin, you've said it to me. I'm like, no, Rachel, I am correct. People need to hear me out on this. I'm going to change everybody's mind, right? That's the way we think as it relates to us communicating truth. We're like, I'm going to change everybody's mind. Now, we just got out of a season where everybody and their mom, sister, cousin, grandpa, anybody who had a social network was trying to tell you something. Did it change your mind? Like, you didn't go on there and read all that and go, yep, sold, right? And no person who just relentlessly runs their mouth at you, do you ever go, because you've kept talking, I'm now convinced. That's never happened. You've always gone, person's driving me crazy. I hope they shut up someday. That's always the way it plays. And so wisdom for you is learning, I don't need to say that right now. I can be silent. And just to sit there and go, Now, if you've got that obnoxious look on your face, that like, I've got something to say, but I'm not going to say it right now. Like, everybody's got smug disposition of just, if I said it right now. Right, and everybody goes, what do you got to say right now, Justin? And you're like, excellent, time to speak. They've invited me. Okay, that still lacks wisdom. All right, and you know, as it relates to authority, there's a lot of wisdom in keeping silent and just not talking. Like when the cop pulls you over, that's not a good time for you just to keep talking. That's usually where it starts going downhill very fast. All right, if your teacher starts communicating to you, it's not a good time for you to diatribe. It's not a good time for you to say, well, let me tell you something, Mr. Yonke. Like, yeah, that's not a good place for you to go, all right? There's times for silence. But, hey, there is going to come a day where in your soul there is fire in your bones for you to speak. And there's a distinction between, like, I'm going to tell them something. And there's a distinction between, like, oh, man, if I stay silent right now, all right? So, like, hey, when somebody is getting picked on at school, it's not a time to keep silent. So stop letting people get picked on at school and being chumps, all right? It's time to say something. And so that's the thing that, like, grates on me the most when I'm in a public high school. Like, when I see kids get picked on, I'm like, ooh, I will go to jail over assaulting a minor right now. because you just see these moments where you're like, oh. And so I got to keep silent, but then I'll usually see somebody I know and be like, punch that kid in the face right now. I'm just kidding. All right, so there's a time. Hey, kill and heal. All right, so there's that. Now, the next one, and last one we'll be in, is that there's a time for love, there's a time for hate, there's a time for war, there's a time for peace. And again, this is that love is personal, and when love gets to a public level, that's peace. All right, so peace is an extension of loving acceptance of people. All right, so love is personal, peace is public. Hate is personal. When hate escalates to a public level, it turns into war. All right, so you don't go to war with somebody that you don't hate, right? So as America's gone into wars, we haven't ever found somebody and be like, man, we just love those guys. Oh, the Iraq, man, we love them. We're just going to invade their country, blow a lot of their buildings up. We love them so much, though. It never happens, right? And we didn't go to war with the Taliban because we loved them. We're like, oh, Osama bin Laden, man, we love you, bro. How's my M16 taste? I mean, that's not, you don't do that. All right, so there's seasons of love, there's seasons of hate, there's seasons of war, there's seasons of peace. Now, the biblical mandate is always towards love and acceptance of your neighbor. But then, as hate kind of begins with anger, there are legitimate times to be angry about something. And your response is where the Bible would say you can be angry and sin not. All right, so there's a way to be angry that doesn't turn into hate. There's a way to be angry over things and to not be hateful. So, like, what's something that angers me? Orphans. Not orphans themselves, the orphan issue. All right? Some of you are like, what? Like, I see an orphan on the street, and I'm like, I'm angry at that kid. He's got some nerve being orphaned. Okay, for real. All right, so the orphan issue is something that angers me, and I think rightfully so. I'm a dad. Man, I just see my kid, and as it relates to children being abandoned by their parents, that, like, internally causes anger in my soul. Like, it's just like, oh, that's got to be. It's an anger that causes action that's not hateful and warring. It's like, I can bring good to that, right? So that anger internally says, let's build orphanages to get kids off of the streets. Yes. Man, let's fund ways for kids to get education and food. Yes, that anger leads to positive action. But if your anger always results in destruction, that's war. That's you causing war, that's you causing hate, and that's not a peaceful response. But you can have anger and still bring love and all that to that situation. And so the Bible's always going to say, love your neighbors. It's never going to say, love your neighbors except when their dog poops in your yard. Then hate them. That's never going to be the way the Bible says. It's always going to go towards love your neighbor, love your neighbor, love your neighbor. That's a biblical norm beginning in Genesis, ending in Revelation. But there's going to be legitimate times in which you say, okay, because of this, we go forward. And so after we get through all of that, we then say, what's your season? Like, what season of life are you in? Because you're in one of those. You're somewhere on that list that every one of us is in a season. And the crazy part about where we're at in this room is some of you are holding back tears tonight, and that's your season. And some of you are so darn happy you can't wipe the smile off your face, all right? Like, the really, 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 really happy people, we're happy for you, but then there's that part of it that's just like, oh, stop smiling. I kind of hate you right now. We usually land there. But in this room, and in any size room, you're going to have people that life is just killing them. And you're going to have people that feel like they're floating. And that's the covering of every one of us is in a season. And so where we land at that, right, no one's arguing with that. To everything, there is a season. Every matter under heaven has a season. Every one of us is in a season. The Bible's not wrong. All right, so here's what we, when we put like the gospel of Jesus lens on it, this is what we do. Acts 17 is where we're going to hang. All right, so if you want to open up to Acts 17, we're going to be in verses 22 to 34. If you've been around here in the last 2 years, you've heard this. You're welcome. All right, but Acts 17, 22 to 34, eventually hang around here long enough and you'll preach this passage for me. All right, so Acts 17, 22 to 34. And this is how we're going to make sense of seasons, all right? So here's what we got. Again, page 793. So Paul, standing in the midst of the Areopagus, said, "Men of Athens, I perceive that in every way you are very religious. For as I passed along and observed the objects of your worship, I found also an altar with this inscription, 'To the unknown God.' What therefore you worship is unknown, this I proclaim to you. The God who made the world and everything in it, being Lord of heaven and earth, does not live in temples made by man, nor is he served by human hands, as though he needed anything, since he himself gives to all mankind life and breath and everything. And he made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined allotted periods, you can call that seasons, and the boundaries of their dwelling place, that they should seek God and perhaps feel their way toward him and find him, yet he is not. He is actually not far from each of us. For in him we live and move and have our being, as even some of your own poets have said, for we are indeed his offspring. Being then God's offspring, we ought not to think that the divine being is like gold or silver or stone, an image formed by the art and imagination of man. The times of ignorance God overlooked, but now he commands all people everywhere to repent, because he has fixed a day, that again being a season, on which he will judge the world in righteousness by a man whom he has appointed. And of this he has given assurance to all by raising him from the dead. Now when they heard of the resurrection of the dead, some mocked, but others said, 'We will hear you again about this.' So Paul went out from their midst. But some men joined him and believed, among whom also was Dionysius, the Areopagite, and a woman named Demarius, and others with them. So the last blank we've got for you tonight is this, that Jesus is the season redeemer. Jesus, the season redeemer. Jesus, the season redeemer. That was odd. Donald Duck just attacked the front row. Okay, so here's what Acts 17 says, and I'll say it really simply. God appoints periods and boundaries for every person. And so very simplistically, you are not where you are by accident. Okay, even if you said and your parents said, you were an accident, we did not intend on having you, God was not surprised when you were born. Okay, so you weren't born and God went, what? Didn't happen. You were born, and even if your mom and dad were like, oh, how are we going to pay for this? God was like, welcome to the planet. Justin Keith Chandler, December 10th, 1983, Frankfurt, Germany, U.S. Army Hospital. Bam. So that was there. So when I came into the world, God was not shocked. God was not surprised. He said, Justin Chandler has an appointed boundary in which I'm just going to move from these different places. That's my boundary. He's got an appointed period. That is the dash of his life that goes from December 10th, 1983 to who knows when. And so that's my period, and that's my boundary. Now, when it relates to seasons, when we read the list, every one of us would rather have the good stuff, right? So like as a husband, my preference is towards embracing than not embracing. I would prefer to embrace my wife. I would prefer to laugh rather than cry. I'd like to laugh so hard I'm crying, but I don't want to weep. Like, no one goes, you know what I could go for today? A good weep. No one says that. Like, oh, you know what would be so good right now? Oh, I just want to mourn hard. Leticia, you do? You want a good weep? Like a good ugly cry. Rather than laughing? Yeah, see, that's what I'm saying. Okay, so we'd all rather, I mean, who'd rather go to a funeral than a dance? Like, everybody, like when it, like you don't go to a funeral and you're like, you know what I'm feeling right now? That jam. Oh, yeah. Like no one does that. And so we would all rather have the good. But here's what I'd tell you. Your seasons of greatest growth in life have come through very difficult seasons. Where you've grown the most as a person has always come in hard times. Like good times don't grow anybody. Right? So you're not like saying, oh, I'm so rich, I'm so happy, I'm so in love, I so have everything. You're not growing in that because you're so rich, you're so in love, you're so happy, you don't need anything. Oh, but man, when you're poor, when you're broke, when you are beat up, when you are sick, when you are, that will grow you. When you go through a season of immense suffering, that'll grow you. And what I always say is you can tell who a person is when hard times come because that reveals who you really are. Like when you get into the, I am just so beat up, so burnt out, so hurt, so like that's where I'm at. That's where you really see who the person is, right? So when you get surprised and you get cut off in traffic, right, and you just kind of let something rip, that little thing is in you, right? That didn't squeak out because you thought of it. Like when someone cuts you off and you were like, you gotta be, woo! Like you didn't go, oh man, where'd that come from? No, that was in you, in your soul, right? You've just been guarding that in other places. When you stub your toe, woo! That's in you, right? That just wrathful, I just punched the couch is in you. And so hard times, bad times, tough times reveal who you are. Now here's what happens with Jesus. What it says there is that God appoints periods, boundaries, and that in those, God reveals himself. And so here's what I'd say. Life slows down, gets really quiet when you go through suffering. Like when that phone call comes and your world just fell apart, life screeches to a halt, right? So we have a really good friend of ours who just found out her mom has cancer. And her mom has been sick for a little bit. She's just been feeling tired. They took her to the hospital and they found out that she has stage 4 colon cancer, stage 4 lung cancer, and stage 4 liver cancer. And then they were going to do some additional testing that said that she might have bone and brain cancer. When that phone rang and she picked up the phone and her mom said, I've got cancer, let me tell you, the world screeches to a halt. And all the other stuff that we've been busying ourselves with all of a sudden don't matter anymore. Like when your mom has just been given a 2 to 6 month time frame in which she's going to live, and 2 years max if she brutalizes her body through chemotherapy, life just got slow. And you stop caring about a new pair of jeans. You stop caring about if your car's not running that well. You stop caring about whatever movie's coming out on Friday. You stop caring about Tuesday and music that's being, all the junk goes away because life slowed down. And then when that happens, man, in suffering and in sorrow, your world can fall apart. Like your world can absolutely shatter and you could never pick yourself back up from that. And you've seen people who have gone through times in their life where suffering and sorrow beat the junk out of them and they never recovered. And you can start to see in people when they're in a season of suffering, sorrow, weeping, that man, it just starts to change their disposition. Like what that does, it just starts to steal from them. It starts to steal personality. It starts to steal joy. It starts to steal gladness. It just starts to take, and you can go, man, I just notice you're changing. And that suffering and sorrow in that season, stealing from it. And here's the honest truth. Outside of Jesus, that season will never, ever, 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 ever be redeemed. It'll just be a really terrible point in your life. But what Jesus does is says, like Romans 8:28, all things work together for good to those who love him. And the Bible says, all things. So there's going to be a time in your life when someone dies. Jesus redeems death. There's going to be a time in your life where you know somebody who gets killed. Jesus redeems when people get murdered. There's going to be a time where people steal from you. Jesus redeems steal. I mean, there's going to be seasons where it is ridiculously painful, and Jesus redeems that. And you're always going to hear me say, when we get here, the worst season in my life was when my dad divorced my mom. Worst season. And I know that we're going to have some tough seasons ahead. Like Rachel and I are not in the life is just going to be awesome for the rest of it because we're happy and in love and having babies. We're never going to have a hard day again because we love Jesus. We don't hold that. Like we know there's going to be some tough days that come. We've walked through tough days since we've been married. And so we recognize that. And so that season for me, I mean, just ripped me apart. Because here I was, a guy who accepted Jesus and was told everything's going to be better tomorrow. And everything got significantly worse. I found out my dad was having an affair with my mom. I found out my dad had said for many months that he was going to divorce my mom. And my mom cried herself to sleep at night for months on end. And I could hear it. And so I'm just hearing my mom cry herself to sleep at night. And the reason she was is my dad said, hey, I don't want you to tell the kids until I come home. I want to tell them in person. And so where my mom said, hey, I just miss your dad, when my dad came home and said, I'm divorcing your mom, I mean, that's day one he gets home. And my parents sent me on this church retreat so they could go work out their divorce and we wouldn't have to be a part of that. Okay, so that slows time down, right? And then when my dad starts talking to me, and honestly, there was a 2-3 year season there where my dad and I were on very aggressive and I would say hateful terms, primarily because of me. And that was a very brutal season, right? But then now, man, I'm 13 years past that moment. And I can look back on that moment and say, Jesus has done significant redemption to my parents getting divorced. And my parents are still divorced. My dad is remarried. He's been married for 10 years to another woman. Jesus' redemption doesn't mean that he always makes everything go back together how it was. There's a lot of times where he's going to say, I'm going to take that portion of your life that's been absolutely brutalized, and then I'm going to watch me spin that into something for your sake, for your good. And so here's how that good works out for me. If we wouldn't have stayed in that town, my family would have moved to another town. I would have graduated from another high school. I would have never been plugged into a local church. I probably would have stopped attending church. I would have just, you know, fizzled out that way. Would have gone to the Air Force Academy, flown jets, drink ice water, ride motorcycles. It would have been great. Now here's what happens. God then keeps me there, keeps me with the youth pastor who was awesome. All of a sudden, I start to feel I'm not supposed to fly planes for the rest of my life. He then sends me to Springfield. Didn't know this town existed. So sends me here, sends me to a school I'd never heard of. I just applied. They said, we don't get that many applications. Come on. So I moved here, started attending here, went to school. Long, boring story, right? Get hired here, and I was hired as the guy who helped the real guy do his job. All right? So that was namely my role. right? So I was the associate youth pastor, which really meant set up chairs, vacuum, print stuff, read a lot of books. That was my primary role. Within a couple months, he quit, moved to another place. All of a sudden, I'm a 22-year-old big dog. And it didn't really mean anything because if parents came back there, they'd be like, who's in charge back here? And then 22-year-old no beard is, I'm like, I'm the guy. And so not a good deal, right? So then here's how allotted periods and boundaries start to work. Rachel came back to Springfield because her dad was sick. And her family moved here because there was a surgery her dad was going to start getting. And they moved here so he could get that surgery. She moved back because he was getting really sick. So she came here and was like, hey, I'll just start a master's program just to pass my time while my dad's sick, right? Dad starts to get better. But then what happens, her sister worked in our office. And then her sister said, hey, you should meet this guy, Justin. Not, hey, meet this guy, Justin. But she was like, hey, meet this guy, Justin. So I met her in the foyer. Our periods and our boundaries all of a sudden cross paths. I don't remember that crossing. She does, and she said some words that reflected the fact that she said, that's the reason I don't like youth pastors, and I'll never marry one. All right, those are her exact words. And what did she always say? I never want to live in Missouri, and I never want to marry a pastor. Bow. So as that happens, right, there comes another point at which our periods and our boundaries cross paths. It was at Buffalo Wild Wings. And I can remember going, dang, that girl down there is pretty good looking, right? And so I had told her sister before, I was like, hey, I'm going to go hang out with your sister tonight. And I was doing it kind of being an obnoxious jerk. You could never see me being obnoxious, all right? But I was like, hey, I'm going to go hang out with your sister tonight. And she was like, I hate you. And it was just, I mean, really was like fire in her soul. And so I remember seeing her and being like, hey, that girl's cool. And I was like, I said something sarcastic along the lines of like, no, aren't I so awesome? And she was like, aren't you the witty one? And just walked away. I was like, oh. All right, so when we hung out a little bit, we crossed paths. Then all of a sudden, this was the part where it got real. I drove up to a Bank of America. And when I drove up, I went to one of the like the little booths on the outside. And so when I was there, the teller was like, hello, Justin Chandler. Welcome back to Bank of America. And my thought was, that teller is great at her job to remember me. And so I'm filling out my stuff and putting it in the pipe. And then I look over and I was like, what? Rachel. And so then, you know, we are kind of exchanging witty banter. Hey, how's it going? And I believe she said, hey, we should hang out sometime. Maybe I said that. I don't know. Either way, it was like, hey, we should cross paths again. All right. And then after that, romance started, all right, because once the paths crossed the third time, we weren't uncrossing those paths. And so then look what starts to play out, man, that as she moved away, fell desperately in love with me, had to move back, we got engaged, listened to a Michael Bublé concert, of course she's going to say yes on that night. Then we like go to a wedding 6 months later, and then we start having a baby a couple years later, then have another baby a couple years later. And so here's this for me. When Jude was born, I like ugly cried. I mean, disgusting, nasty. I'm never going to be picked up off of the ground crying, right? Her mom was like, is he okay? And her thought was, is Justin bailing right now? Like, she thought I was totally out. Like, I'm just going to leave the room and never come again, right? And so here's where this got just real for me. In that moment when my son was born, the reason there was weeping and just uncontrollable tears for me was not due to sadness. It was overwhelming, I can't control it, joy. And the reason it was is because in that moment, as I was sitting there with my wife, I looked at my boy and I said, he's never going to experience what I did in our family. He'll never know that. He's never going to taste divorce. He's never going to have to taste that conflict between his mom and his dad. Never going to happen. He's not going to have Jesus find him. He's not going to have to be invited to church. He's not going to have some friends who love and care for him, pray for him lots, trying to get him to come into the building just so he could hear the gospel. He's not going to have that. He's going to have to run from Jesus and abandon him. And so for me, in that room, the reason there was so much stuff in my soul right then is in that moment, I felt God say, I redeemed the season. That all that stuff that you went through, all the things that have been known about Chandler men in the past, all of that's done with. And Jude will be the first who never tastes it. And for me, man, it just crushed my soul. And every time I see my kid, and every time I pray with my kid, and every time I put him to bed and read him stories, man, when I'm looking at my boy, the first thing in my brain every time is, you're never going to taste that. And that's redeeming a season. And I can't have that perspective the day after my parents get divorced. I can't have that perspective 4 years after, 5 years after. It took me 11 years to figure out God had redeemed a season. And you may be in a season, coming out of a season, going through a season in which you're going, I don't know how God's going to make any good out of this. But the beauty of Jesus is he redeems every season for good for all who love him. And if the scriptures are saying what we're saying tonight, man, I feel like there's just a couple easy ways that we all will get a chance to respond tonight. And the first one and the easiest one is that if you don't know Jesus, and what a beautiful night to say, man, God, take redemption over this season of my life. Like, take redemption over all of my years, whether you're, you know, 14, 15, or you're 18. This is an opportunity for you to say, man, God can redeem all of that past season. You may be in a season that needs explaining. Like, you have no idea what's going on right now. You have no idea where God's at. You have no idea what he's doing. But you're in a like, man, Jesus, I need this season to be explained. The other thing is that you could be recovering from a season. Like, you could be after it, out of it. You're not weeping anymore, but you're still feeling wounds from a season. And so you could be in it going, man, I'm still recovering and coming out of that thing. And then you could be coming into a season where you go, man, I need to trust God for that one. And whether that's graduation and that be a happy, joyful one, or you're coming into a season in your family that you know, man, this is about to get real. And you could say, man, I just need to trust Jesus in that season. And we're going to give you an opportunity here in a little bit that we'll get some leaders, and that if you're in any of those, I feel like all of us have a way to respond tonight. But if you're in one of those, man, we're going to have some leaders who are going to come up and give an opportunity to pray with you, all right? But what we're going to do right now is we're going to stand to our feet, and Tyler's going to come up here and get ready to crush in some worship tonight.